With that, we'll have agenda item number 5, legislative update from Secretary Roebling.
Hey, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Congratulations, Mr. Chairman, on being the chairman. So I just want to first start off with that, and members of the commission, Kevin Roebling here, interim department secretary at Game Fish and Parks. Just wanted to give you an overview as to where we're at with legislative session and kind of just a quick update on the 5 bills that the department's carrying. Right now, House Bill 1034, it's the youth hunting bill that streamlines the age eligibility for youth hunters, so anybody under the age of 18 would be considered a youth hunter. The second part of that bill allows free fishing for anybody under the age of 18. That bill did get out of committee. It's on the House side, and also is up actually for voting today on the House floor. So the it was originally on the consent calendar. There was some fiscal questions about it, but at the end of the day, those questions have been answered, and it'll be up for vote consideration today on the House floor. House Bill 1035, it was the repealing of the lock and seal requirements that would allow us then to go down the virtual e-tagging path of tagging big game animals virtually, in a sense. That bill passed committee, passed the House just 2 days ago. I believe we had about two-thirds vote on that in favor of that bill, so that is going to be heading over to the Senate here shortly. A lot of good conversation on the overall concept of e-tagging, and at the end of the day, that process, that whole concept package, if you will be in front of this body. We'll work through a lot of the details of that. You know, the implementation procedures are down the road, 2-3 years down the road, and this is the first piece of that conversation, is to repeal that lock and seal requirement. The lock and seal requirement is still in rule. This body has the authority to remove that rule if necessary, when necessary, so nothing changes for the user today nor tomorrow, or when the Senate hopefully passes this bill. So just wanted to make that clear. This will just be more work for you folks, and we'll have lots more conversations to come regarding the lock and seal requirements of big game tagging and the virtual tagging concept. The third bill is out of the House, and it was in Senate committee this morning. That's 1036. It's a cleanup bill. That bill is got out of committee on consent calendar in Senate Ag, and will be on the consent calendar in the Senate here likely today, or I should say tomorrow, or the next week. So those three bills are moving along. We do have House Bill 1047. That is the landowner-owned land, non-resident East River deer bill. That bill would allow a non-resident East River landowner that owns 160 contiguous acres the ability to obtain up to 2 deer licenses on their own property. Again, it's limited to 2. It's limited to the property they own. The other piece of that is they have to be owner-operator of that land. So we are likely going to have that bill up in committee. It's scheduled for February 2nd, I believe. We have had a lot of conversations about the potential amount of folks that would utilize that statute. Last year, if you recall, we had a statute that allowed non-resident West River landowners the ability to obtain deer licenses on the land they own. If they own 640 contiguous acres, this is 160. Last year, we had 29 individuals take advantage of that opportunity that were non-resident landowners on the west side of the river. So we suspect right around that 4-5% participation rate, which would put us in the realm of, you know, 300-400 license holders at the end of the day that would take advantage of the opportunity. More conversation to come on that, and if there's any questions in detail, I can turn that over to Tom Kirschman. But I do have a couple more bills before we do so. We have Senate Bill 54. That's the appropriations bill for the Bison Center. That came out of Senate State Affairs as a due pass, 9-0. Lots of support for the Bison Center construction. That'll be up in Joint Appropriations Committee. Hasn't been scheduled yet, but at the end of the day, we're very excited to have conversations with legislators about that exciting Bison Center project. So more to come on that. Yes, lots of good feedback for sure on that one. We did have 2 governor bills just come out here yesterday. The one has been numbered, and the other one I don't believe has, but I will give you the numbers on the GFP forfeiture bill. It's House Bill 1111, so 1111, and what that is really striking is the forfeiture statute that allowed the Game Fish and Parks Department forfeit vehicles, I think it's boats, dogs, and guns are the four things that I recall on the forfeiture list. We just don't use that statute, quite honestly. We haven't forfeited a piece of those four items in a long, long time, and we want to make sure that we just take that out of the books and repeal that statute and make sure that is not out there for an option to do. It's a property issue, and we want to make sure that that is an exercise. So, again, the department hasn't used the forfeiture statute for quite some time, so we're looking forward to supporting that bill. And if there's any questions on it, we'll be happy to answer them. The other bill, like I said, has not been given a number yet that I can recall, and I'm looking at Mr. Kutelnik, and he's shaking his head no still, so I don't think it's been dropped in detail, but it is the open fields bill that would require a conservation officer to obtain landowner permission in order to do a compliance check with the exceptions of if there's reasonable suspicion or probable cause, if there's a distressed or injured animal that needs to be dispatched, and the third one is responding to an emergency situation. Again, we strongly feel that the private property rights in the state, we want to strengthen those private property rights. Our conservation officers are definitely going to enhance those landowner and producer relationships, obtain landowner permission before the season starts, work with producers on a day-to-day basis like they're already doing, and this will definitely strengthen those relationships. So we're definitely looking forward to supporting that bill, strengthening the private property rights in the state. And with that, I will take any questions on any of those.
Any of the commissioners have questions on any of our legislative bills for Secretary Roebling? If not, I had one on the forfeiture side of it that was brought to me last week. So you're out at night spotlighting off your property, totally illegal, shooting a deer or whatever, and our officers come upon someone. Are they going to not take the rifle or gun or whatever is being used to commit the crime or alleged crime and hold it as evidence until the next court date, or will they just issue citations and give them their guns back?
Through the chair, great question. At the end of the day, they would still have the capabilities to seize that equipment for evidence. And once that case is closed, that evidence, if you will, if the judge doesn't order a forfeiture, would go back to the individual that committed the crime if there was a crime. So, yes, the abilities to seize evidence is still on the books, absolutely.
Okay. Any other questions? Commissioner Sharp?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kevin, you mentioned the landowner, non-resident, they would have to be owner-operator. Could you expand on that, please?
Yes. So the way it is written, I don't have the rule directly in front of me, but there is a description they have to be involved in the day-to-day management decisions. So there could be just an investor, let's say, that owns land, just collects the rent check, doesn't make any of those management decisions on that land. We're looking for the active operator of the individual that actually owns the land. Makes the farming decisions, runs the cattle out there. There's situations, as been told, by folks that came to this body asking for this, where they own land, let's say in South Dakota, they farm 3 miles on the other side of the border in Nebraska, or live on the other side of the border, but they can't shoot a deer on the land that they farm just across the border. These are the situations we really would like to address. We've had a few inquiries here lately and over the last decade, for sure, of this situation. Again, it's only the land they own is where this license would be valid and where they could use it to hunt.
So if somebody owned land, they're out of state, they own a quarter, and their only farming was food plots and habitat, would they qualify as an owner-operator for a license?
I would probably have to say they would. At that point, they're making the management decisions of a food plot and habitat, and they're likely enrolled in a CRP program. Yes, they would qualify at that point.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions on any?
Commissioner Lacken?
Back to the non-resident, we've heard the number 320 acres, and we've heard the number 160 acres. Do we have the option of going to 320, or if the legislature passes it as 160, is that what we would be locked in as?
Through the chair. Commissioner Locke, an excellent question. Right now, the bill language says 160 contiguous acres. So there would have to be an amendment drafted in the legislature to change that acreage requirement. There's been discussions on that piece, absolutely have been discussions on changing that acreage requirement, increasing it, maybe this 320, maybe 640. That would then reduce the amount of eligible non-resident landowners that would be eligible to put their name in for up to these two licenses valid on their own land. Those conversations will likely happen. I have talked to many legislators over there that, you know, are thinking the same thing there. Is 160 the right number? And that's where the conversation's at right now.
Commissioner Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's walk down the path a little farther on that conversation. Last year, and I'm not expecting exact numbers, but last year we had how many landowners West River non-resident that would have qualified for the license?
Through the chair. Last year there was approximately 740 non-resident landowners that owned 640 contiguous acres or more, if my memory serves me correct. Tom's shaking his head, so that is correct. And at the end of the day, we would anticipate then about 1,500 could be eligible, 1,500 licenses could have been eligible for allocation on the west side of the river. And at the end of the day, we had 29 that were allocated. So as you can see, the number that were eligible and the number that took that opportunity to obtain a deer license on their own land is less than 4 or 5%.
So is it fair to say that last year, a lot of the people that had concerns on that particular bill felt that they were going to lose out on at least 1,500 deer licenses based on allowing non-resident to have a license, and we ultimately ended up with only 29. And isn't that some of the conversation on the 160 where there's concern out there that 4,800 people qualified, and so they think we're going to lose 8,400 or 80-some hundred licenses when in fact it's probably going to be closer to 30 based on experience?
Yes, through the chair. Right now we do anticipate of the 160 acre requirement, 4,200 would be eligible on the east side of the river. Just looking strictly at land ownership, not looking at operator as well as ownership. On that case, we have been hearing accusations, I'll say that over 8,000 licenses will be allocated to non-residents in South Dakota on the east side of the river if this legislation passes. The department feels very strongly that will not be the case. We think, you know, of the 4 or 5%, we're talking less than 500 licenses for sure would be allocated on the east side of the river if, you know, those folks that wanted a license were to get one on their own property once again. So. Did that somewhat answer your question, Commissioner Sharp?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Other questions regarding that or anything else? One thing I will share, we'll send some information, some data regarding the East River non-resident landowner-owned land concept. We'll send it to all the commissioners. Tom Kirschman has the speaking points for that. Make sure you guys have the numbers we have, because I know there'll be constituency that are asking questions about that bill in particular, and we want to make sure that you have those numbers. So we'll get those to you, Commissioner Sharp. Thank you for bringing that up.
Any other questions on the legislative update? Seeing none, we'll move on to number six.